doctor, give me the news. I got a bad case loving you.
Well, Dr. Sharon Brangman joins me in the studio this morning. Good morning, Dr. Brangman.
Good morning.
We're so happy to have you back. We're always pleased to have you here. Listeners, as you may know, Dr. Brangman is chief of geriatrics at Upstate. She's a nationally recognized expert in the challenges of aging. And Dr. Brangman, I want to read you a little portion of an article that we recently found, and I'm going to hope that your hair doesn't stand on end when you hear it, all right? It says, the world is aging so fast that within a decade, there will be more people 65 and older than children under 5 for the first time, according to the U.S. Census Bureau. Once the baby boomers, those born between 1946 and 64, start to turn age 65, the proportion of older people in the U.S. is expected to reach 20% of the population, although that percentage is still much lower than the projected rates in Western Europe. And this is a report that was commissioned by the National Institute on Aging. And tell me, is your hair standing on end?
Well, this is not news for those of us who work with old people all the time and work in the fields of geriatrics and gerontology, because we do have an aging country. In fact, we have an aging world, and that the birth rate in Europe and other places is really low compared to the aging of the population.
Well, and the aging of the population is actually two things if we look at these statistics. It's a percentage of the population, but the sheer numbers are staggering as well. And we don't have those at the moment, but you're beginning to see that in your practice, aren't you?
Well, I already know I live it every day because we know that people are living longer. We've made remarkable advances in taking care and managing heart disease, cancers, infections. They used to call pneumonia the old man's friend.
Mm-hmm.
We can take care of many pneumonias now. So we find that people are living longer. But I think as a culture and as a society, we've ignored the consequences of aging.
Well, we have in many ways. And I use the example, someone who might have died of a heart attack at the age of 48 is now living into his or her 60s with heart disease, perhaps diabetes, and other things. The comorbidities, and that's the term for having more than one thing, are staggering. And these are the folks you're seeing.
Well, my typical patient is generally in their mid to upper 80s. They may have a number of health problems, really like one in each organ system. So they might have heart disease, high blood pressure, diabetes, their kidneys may be slowing down, they might have arthritis, and they might have a memory problem. So it's not unusual for me to take care of somebody who has 6, 8, or even 9 different medical problems and one pill for each of those problems.
And then reality really strikes. If I am your patient or if I'm the child of one of your patients, I take mom in to see you and I really only get a few minutes with you, or mom does. She's got so many problems, and yet you've got thousands of these folks who are coming to see you, and you are only one primary care physician. All of you are in the same boat, aren't you?
Well, primary care has taken a big hit over the past few years, maybe even a decade or more, because the care that is provided is complex. It requires time. It requires a physician to listen. And you have to be able to follow someone over time.
Yes. Now, in your primary care, but you're a specialist too.
Well, geriatrics, I think, is a little bit unique because we do a substantial amount of primary care. In fact, geriatricians as a whole do more primary care than general internists, family physicians, on older people. However, we also can serve as a specialist. If a patient already has a primary care physician, we can do a geriatric evaluation, an assessment, and then make some suggestions for their overall management.
You can. This requires more than just you. You have a whole team of people, right?
Right. We have a team. I work with Dr. Jean Bishop, as well as a team of nurses, nurse practitioner, physician assistant. We have a social worker. There is a whole team that's involved, and of course that increases the expenses and the overhead and the amount of time that is spent with the patient.
But we patients are demanding that. I mean, it's not like we're saying, waking up in the morning and saying, I'm going to go and demand that my geriatrician, my primary care doctor, do this for me. It's that I present with so many different problems that in effect I'm demanding that kind of care because that's the basics I need.
Well, that's what happens to our bodies as they get older.
Mm-hmm.
We develop a complex assortment of problems. It's important to sort out what's normal aging and what is actually a disease. And we don't cure as much as we care. So I use that to really demonstrate that we have problems medical issues that don't disappear, but they still need to be managed. And when you have more than one at a time, they can all play off of each other, and it's important to know which one is causing which problem.
Well, there's going to be a further exacerbation, if that's a good word, for primary care and geriatrics in particular, as healthcare reform takes hold. And it's not that the services you provide are going to change. It's rather that there will be that many more people who need the services. So talk to us a little bit about that.
Well, there is a huge healthcare workforce shortage, especially as it relates to providing care for an aging society. And there was a report that was commissioned by the American Geriatric Society and completed by the Institute of Medicine that showed that this country is just woefully unprepared to take care of an aging population. And this is everyone from direct care workers, such as nurses' aides, to physical therapists, nurses, physicians, pharmacists, the entire healthcare team that is really required to take care and meet our needs.
And it really isn't just about healthcare reform and those folks who don't have insurance now, because they're actually the younger population. The older folks are the people with Medicare. And so these numbers are only going to grow bigger and bigger as more people are on Medicare.
Oh, certainly. If we look at the broad picture, if we have about 44 million Americans who are uninsured and they get insurance, there's going to be quite a challenge in providing them with primary care, because we just don't have enough primary care physicians in this country.
And so the word for those who do not have a primary care physician right now is to go find one ASAP and then hang on to that person for dear life.
Well, that is one way to approach it, but I know a lot of primary care physicians are limiting their practice.
And understandably so. Well, Dr. Sharon Brangman, you are always full of great information for us. Thanks so much for coming by this morning.
Thank you very much.
Hi, I'm psychologist Dr. Rich O'Neill with this week's Checkup from the Neck Up. The world's most life-changing question, or asking our way to balance success and happiness. You know how we all have multiple tugs on our attention much of the time? And how we get caught up in one part of our lives, neglect others, and end up paying a big price full of regret? Or how we go impulsively with our gut and misusing our judgment to choose balance? And how we let others decide for us and get the life they want. What's the checkup from the neck up solution to these ancient human problems? Well, actually, it involves checking up and down, both thoughts and gut feelings. But first, let's think of ourselves as a set of concentric circles, one around the other. The center circle is our essential self, our core values, feelings, and energy. When push comes to shove, who I am. The outer circles are the roles we play in various contexts in our lives. Our most valued ones are nearest the center and others further out. So, for example, my closest to my center is my family context, with me in roles of husband and father. Next one out is work, as a psychologist, and so on. One cool thing is we set up our own circle system. At life's critical forks in the road, I take a moment to let go of the pulls this way and that. Think about what roles are involved. Relax and connect with how I feel in my center. And knowing the feeling in my heart, I ask, what's the most centered choice for my whole life right now? Rather than a no-brainer, choices become two-brainers, using both thinking brain judgment and feeling brain in so-called emotional intelligence. An example, about 10 years ago, I was in a board meeting for an organization I value a lot. The board was looking for a time to meet again in 6 months. Several possibilities, including Halloween weekend. Our kids were little, and as a family, we loved Halloween. Most board members, including the president, preferred the holiday weekend to meet, and they wanted me at the meeting. Yikes. Conflict with potential costs on both sides. So, I took a moment, thought about my circles, connected with my love for my kids, and knew I was not willing to miss our Halloween fun. If the group met without me, fine. I told the board, including why. A few people laughed, the president wasn't pleased, but the group picked the other weekend, and it turned out win-win by sparking a move that made the group more family-friendly. I may have paid a price in my place in the organizational pecking order, but one I would never regret paying. I knew that there are endless chances to say, I make a motion that. But how many chances are there to carve the pumpkin and say to our kids, nice mask? before they put it on. I'm Dr. Rich O'Neill. Thanks for listening. And hey, everybody, nice mask to you, too. Isn't it a little early, though?